Recording is on.
And did our guests today have a chance to test the sharing, Harrison?
Not yet, but okay. I think it should work. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I think so too. And I see everybody here. So great. All right. Well, welcome everyone. I'm really excited about today. I think self-sovereign identity is one thing. And I think we in this room all care about it. But we all interact with it when we're thinking about enterprise software and we're thinking about the times that we are going to have to engage with it. Or that we're going to have to engage with enterprise software and how can we, protect ourselves. And so I'm really excited to have Ricardo and Daniel and Jurgen here, to share with us. So I'm just going to run through our quick little housekeeping notes and then we will go ahead and get started. So, just to remind everyone that, this is a wonderful community where we are all assume good intent, from the other members of the community and we adhere to the W3C's code of conduct. And if you want to take a deeper dive into what that content is, you can review it in the agenda. Also, we're so happy that you're here. If you're new to this community, then you're welcome. Everyone is welcome in the community group. And we're glad to be, as this community group, a large voice in the space of credentialing. And so we're glad you're here. If you are interested in participating more often, more in depth on one of the work items, then we'd really invite you to go ahead and create an account at W3C and become a member of the CCG so that you can fully participate in this community. And that the links for all of that are also in the agenda for today. And then this meeting, as you may have noticed, is being recorded, and we also keep a transcript of all of the comments and discussion that is made. And we do that for historical archives to be able to have the great talks that we have, the folks that come and give of their time to keep record of those. And also for us as a community to be able to look back and think about the decisions we're making and the way that we're moving forward based on that information. So if you would like to participate in the conversation, then we do follow a queue structure, which is if you would like to speak, then I'd ask you to put Q+ in the chat, which will flag you to me or Harrison or Alex to be able to call on. And we will do that. And in the order sort of as received, or if we know that the conversation is going one way, we'll act as moderator for that conversation. If you'd like to remove yourself from the queue, you can use Q-, and that will take you off of the queue. All right. And so now we are at the point of the housekeeping items where I get to welcome you all again and ask if there are any new folks that would like to put themselves on the queue and introduce themselves and talk a little bit about what it is that they do and what is interesting to them about this community. And if you have been a member of this community, but you have something that you'd like to share or reintroduce yourself after having been not here for a while, I'll give kind of a little pause, a long teacher pause, to see if you'd like to add yourself to the queue. Okay, well, welcome everyone. The next item is for us to talk about any announcements or reminders that anyone has for this community, something that they've heard recently, something that they've that they're participating in, another organization that would like to share, or even something that you just want to update us about. Phil, go ahead.
Yes, good day. Just wanted to let folks know that there is a Trusted Learner Network unconference scheduled for April 3rd and 4th in Phoenix, Arizona at ASU. And at least on the afternoon of the 3rd, it will be a day that T3 is using with the support of the TLN and ASU to present the various verifiable credential projects that have been underway through T3 activities, including work on a LER VC implementation guide and library resource for implementers, as well as a linked claims web tool for creating self-authored credentials and linking them to other credentials, a discussion of the recently released LER RS HR open standard for resumes for HRIS vendors, and related topics. So that's April 3rd in Phoenix. Thanks.
Thanks, Phil. Can you also give us just a quick two-sentence explanation of what T3 is?
Oh, of course. T3 is the branch of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation, which is dedicated to leveraging the technologies for recognizing skills, knowledges, and abilities in support of skills-based hiring and advancement, and in ensuring that all learning is recognized and included in such credentials. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm very jealous. I'm not going to make it out there this year, and I'm very sad to not be there. Anyone else with a announcement or reminder for the community? All right, then we will get straight to our topic for today, self-sovereign identity for organizations, requirements for enterprise software. And we're pleased to welcome, and I'd ask them to go ahead and introduce themselves once I turn the mic over to them. But we have Ricardo and Daniel and Jürgen, and I'm going to let you guys give us your full introductions before you start your talk. Thank you. And I hope I did your names all right. Thank you so much. Welcome.
Welcome. I actually have an introduction slide, so I can just wait. Let me, so you can also see our faces. Wait a minute. So, can you see the slide?
Yes,
you can.
Yeah, okay. So, just about us. So me and my colleagues, we are a member of the Digital Civil Systems Group of the University of Applied Science in Dresden. So me and Daniel are research associates, and Jürgen is the professor of our working group. And even though we are all currently working in academia, every one of us has actually experience in the working sector. So for instance, before I worked as a research associate, I worked as a software developer for accounting and ERP systems targeted towards small and medium-sized enterprises. So I have some experience with these systems that companies use for their everyday business. So that's basically about me. I don't know if Daniel and Jürgen, do you want to say a few words about yourself before we start the presentation?
Yeah, sure. So I'm researching digital credentials, not only SSI, but also basically the concepts behind it and how they fit into value co-creation and service ecosystems. And I, before I went into academia, I also worked in various development and consulting roles with SAP, actually.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. My name is Jürgen Anke. I'm heading the Digital Service Systems Research Group here at Dresden University of Technology. And I just would like to thank you for giving us the opportunity to present our research. And I would like give back to Ricardo then. Thanks.
So then thanks for inviting us. And I would say we start with our presentation. So let's talk about self-sovereign identity for organizations. Here's our agenda. So before we take a look at our results, I'll just will do a quick introduction to who we actually did already. So we only will do the what, how, and why. And then we will go into our results. Let's start with our research questions first. We basically had two main questions. So the first one was to look at potential requirements that organizations have for SI software. And this was also our main research question. We also looked at potential constraints that organizations may face. And in addition to this, we also looked at another question. But this wasn't our main question. So the first question was our main question. And the second question, which looked at existing solutions and examined gaps between our requirements and the solutions. That was our second question. So, but I have to say, this presentation isn't a complete paper presentation. So the paper is actually rather large with 24 pages. I will cover some aspects of it, but not all aspects. So let's look at how we did it. So basically, we did a triangulation and used three main sources. So on the right side, you can see the profile of our experts that we interviewed. You can see that most of them had quite some experience in the SSI space. And we also talked with people from SSI providers, from research, and also from things like the private sector. So, and basically, besides that, we also analyzed products. As you can see, the products and their vendors are listed here. And this is actually also the first limitation of our study. We could only include these six products. But we think even if we included more products, our results wouldn't change so much. But there is the problem that not so much software is currently targeted towards organizations. Most is targeted towards people. And there's also the problem that software is moving so fast and it takes a lot of time to actually do research. So we had just to make a cutoff and we couldn't examine every product. But if you have any interesting product you should take a look at, feel free to mention it at the end or send me an email. And the third pillar of our research was a literature review. So basically, not only the public literature, but also internal documents such as process diagrams, which was provided by our research partners. So our research partners were also very broad. So from a small town to one of the largest companies that for material handling equipment. So this gives us some interesting insights. So this is the quote which got us famous on LinkedIn as what posted. So basically, we already did a smaller study in, I think, 2022. And basically, we already had there the insight that there is a difference between individuals and organization when we talk about SSI. So for the individual as a holder, they basically want to have sovereignty over their own data. But if you look at organizations like company or other public or public sector bodies, we have multiple people that should have access. So basically it's a bit more complicated with them. And there was actually our insight, there may be two approaches needed. But also in the discussion with the experts, there was the sentiment that the base technology, like, for example, the credential formats, they may be rather similar or even identical in certain areas. So it's not something completely different. The foundation may actually be rather similar. So I won't talk about this slide. Don't be afraid of this wall of text. This is just a list of some of the differences. Some of these differences I will cover later on. Others are only covered in the in the paper. So let's dive into requirements for organizations. But first, let's look at the trust triangle or the trust diamond. So this is one of the most common illustrations of the trust triangle. And usually we have this holder in the middle, and the holder is usually a human. So, but organizations, they can be holders too, which we will see later on. And, but even if we replace, this human with organization, I think the trust triangle or trust diamond is still a bit misleading because it cements the view that each of these entities has only a single role. So the verifier is only a verifier, the issuer is only a issuer. However, this isn't exactly true, as you can see on the next slide. So organizations actually don't have a single role only. So I will explain this with the illustration here. It's basically a simplified interaction between two organizations. On the left side, we have a manufacturing organization, and on the right side, we have this certificate organization. And basically, we can assume that the manufacturing company wants a certificate, and the process has already happened. So, for example, the organization on the right, they actually looked at some of the factories of the left organization, and they are already checked everything, but they want to issue the credential now. And so the first steps are that the right organization, the certifying organization, which is basically the issuer, does in the issuer role request an ID from the manufacturing organization, which isn't the holder role. But as we see in the next interaction, actually the issuing organization also is a verifier in this interaction, because they want to check, okay, is this really the manufacturing organization I'm talking to? So we see, yeah, there are actually multiple roles involved. So the issuer doesn't only act as an issuer, and the issuer even acts as a holder because they present their own ID, and in this case also an issuer verified credential, which basically contains the information that they are actually authorized to issue a certificate. And you could also imagine that, for example, the manufacturing company does not only present an ID, but also something like a wallet attestation. That means that this wallet contestants could, for example, contain that the wallet meets certain criteria, like regarding security, because the organization on the right, they have an interest that the credentials that they issue to the manufacturing organization isn't, for example, easily copied or misused. So they actually want also to, in some cases, to verify that the wallet meets certain criteria. And as we see, basically, both organizations have multiple roles. So, and at the end, when they both have basically identified each other, the actual certificate is exchanged. And even if we would replace this manufacturing organization with a human, and we would have switched from B2B to B2C, the issuer would still likely act in all three roles. So, but I see in discussions with some people that they always think, yeah, that's only the issuer, and yes, this issuer role. So I think sometimes the trust triangle is misleading for some people, because they are too much in their mental model that they only think, yeah, okay, the verifier is only the verifier, the issuer is only the issuer. And now we go on from these roles to software systems, because these systems, these roles, they need to be systems, so they to actually embody that role. And there is basically, in the talks with the experts doing the interviews, there was, and with other experts, there was basically the discussion about, yeah, do we need a single system with multiple components or multiple independent systems? So basically, do we need a wallet, a verifier system, an issuer system? Are they all separate, or is this basically all one system with an Istio component, a verifier component, and a holder component. But the main problem is also the thing about names. So you have the term wallet, but wallet is not well defined. So for some people, wallet is only the storage. For some people, it includes an agent and is the whole application. And there's even some discussion, can for some people, wallet can issue credentials, for others cannot. So I think we really need terms for these kind of systems, but there aren't any. So there's basically agent to, as a generic term, but I think it's kind of technical and business people won't understand, yeah, verifier agent, and doesn't sound good. And I think agent has too many meanings in other domains, so I think we need names for these systems. Now let's dive a bit deeper. So organizations, like you see here, they deal with a lot of credentials and documents and act in various roles, as we already discussed. For example, you could perceive every organization that issues invoices as a verified credential as an issuer, and every organization that receives such an invoice would be a verifier. So there are lots of credentials and lots of issuers and verifiers and holders of credentials. And currently, these credentials are often paper-based and not very reliable. And to manage digital credentials, organizations need a credential management. So here we see our categories of credential management. I won't go into all of the details because it's actually some of these will be well known to you. And if you are interested, this is examined over several pages in the paper, and there are many requirements listed. So the areas here, this are only requirement categories, and for each requirement category, we have actually several requirements. But as many of them will be known to you, and there are only small details interesting for you, I will only talk about some of the specific aspects. So, for example, some of you may wonder, for example, if modification is really advisable for verifiable credentials, because modifiable verifiable credentials doesn't sound like something that would work together, because you want it to be tamper evident. You don't want that your verifiable credential changes, because it doesn't make sense if you think about it. But this actually stems from something different from an earlier research we did. And in this, we compared physical credentials and verifiable credentials. So basically, we looked at physical credentials and did a taxonomy. I won't go into the details of the taxonomy. The paper is mentioned below if you want to look, but we don't have enough time to cover the whole taxonomy. But as you see, and when you think about it, credentials in the real world can be modified. For example, this is a vaccination pass as an example. And if you get a vaccination, the doctor basically either uses a sticker or does sign it. So they do an entry into the vaccination pass after they vaccinated you. So basically, this modification to this physical credentials, you don't get a new vaccine pass. You have the same credential, but it gets updated by a third party. And this third party is not the issuer. So the issuer and the modifier are actually different roles in this case. And this isn't really supported by current systems. And this is the main point of this slide, verified credentials may not need to replicate physical credentials one-to-one. So we could also imagine that basically we change the credential or we change our business process. So that, for example, one solution to this vaccination pass problem could be you could revoke the vaccination pass and issue a new updated one. I don't think that's a good solution, because I think revocation should only be for cases when there is a really good reason. And I think sometimes if you revoke a credential and there is no reason provided why the credential was revoked, it's not entirely clear to the holder why it was revoked. Another approach would be you could issue a new credential for each vaccination. But the problem is, now you have like 20 credentials and your wallet. And if they are not grouped together, it's kind of painful to do a presentation. So I think a useful concept would be something which I call composite credentials. So basically, composite credentials are just a container and which group credentials that belong together as a group. So for example, if you have like 20 vaccination entries, you could have this composite credential that groups them into one credential. So this isn't like a verifier presentation, which is for the verifier, where you can combine multiple credentials, but for the holder, so the holder can group them. And for organizations, they have lots and lots of credentials, so we need to do some kind of grouping. Otherwise, they have so many credentials that they will not see how many credentials they have, and it will be unusable for them because they have too many. So now let's dive into the topic organizational identity and relationships. So we have actually a problem with organizations, which is already solved for natural persons. They don't have an ID document. They don't have a driver license. They don't have a passport. So that's actually a problem, but maybe also an opportunity, which I will go later on. And basically, there is not even a globally unique identifier for organizations. Usually organizations have even multiple identifiers that they use in the real world. And some of these identifiers are listed, and like an LEI, dance number, GLN. And I don't think that an organization will have single ID credentials. I think there will be multiple ID credentials for different contexts. So for example, if you are an organization in Europe and you are trading with Europe partners, you may have something like a European organizational ID. But if you are trading as a European company, for example, with a company in Asia or South America, your European ID won't be that useful, because you can show it to, for example, this Asian company, but the Asian company may not have a European ID. They have a different ID. So you need to understand different kinds of IDs. So we will likely have multiple ID credentials. And there's also the problem that who can present these credentials? So an organization can't act on its own. It's either represented by people or by software. And that brings me to our next slide. So on the right, you see, I think a really interesting concept, which is followed by Clive, the VLEI. And basically, they have for people, they have two types of VLEIs. So if you are a member of an organization, for example, a company, you can have different roles. So they differentiate between official representatives and everything else, basically. So official representatives, the main difference is that you can independently verify this information. So for example, you can look at a trade register and see that this person is the CEO of this company. So actually, a third party can validate this information and can issue a verifiable credential based on that. For everything else, for example, a purchasing agent or something else, that's usually, there is no independent source. So this is basically just based on company rules, and the verified credential has to be issued by the organization itself. So you have these two kinds of credentials, and actually the first one is more powerful than the first one, because it's not a self-attestation by the organization, but by a third party. And for example, Clive is working towards solving this problem, and they basically offer two different credentials to solve this. And another thing is that sometimes to act in the name of the organization, for example, to sign a contract, you need multiple signatures. So, for example, you have two CEOs, and only if both of them sign the contract is valid. So in this case, there would be something like multi-signature needed, which I don't think is supported by current SSI solutions. So both of them would in some way need to sign some kind of transaction so that the transaction is actually approved. Organizations are also rather complex units. So for a human, they may have a family, they may have like children, and the children maybe some of their credentials may be managed by parents. But some organizations consist of hundreds of sub-organizations. So there is a rather big complexity here compared to natural persons. And these relationships are usually hierarchical. So basically, there's this top-level organizations and several organizations below, and there may be multiple levels. And I think the systems need to represent this. So for example, for things like ERP or accounting systems, there exist multi-tenant systems, which allow to solve this problem. But I think we need something like this for SSI systems too, or need to integrate SSI components into existing ERP or accounting software. And the problem of delegation also is present for organizational units. So for example, there may be a sub-organization which issues a credential in the name of its superior organization. So the sub-organization is in this case not the issuer. It does the issuing process, but it issues in the name of the organization. And this has to be solved in some way also. But this sub-organization may only issue certain credentials in the name of the top organizations. So there need to be some kinds of rules to enforce this. And besides organization units, organizations have also many relationships to other entities, like their customers and their suppliers. And the difference for these relationships compared to relationships between, for example, between people or between people and organizations. So if it's a relationship between an organization or an organization, usually these relationships are rather long-living. So, for example, the relationship with your supplier, these relationships are usually for years, and you have frequently contact with them. So I think there needs to be some kind of interoperability with systems like CRMs or supplier resource management systems. And also that you basically can import, for example, your supplier presents you a verified credential that contains their master data in a verifiable way, that you can import this into your system and basically have verifiable master data because handling master data and keeping it up to date is really, really expensive and really, really painful. So there's a lot of value if we can do this in an automated way. For example, if we use verified credentials. So let's talk also about some of the gaps we identified. So for example, modification I already covered, but there are also something like complex validations. What do I mean by that? Complex validations, so as examples like using regular expressions, for example, to verify a certain property, or using something like, yeah, this property and this property, or this property must be have this value. So validations that are more complex than the current validations. But there's also some discussion about it, because it's a question. These complex validations are usually business logic. So they are all already implemented in existing business systems. So there's the discussion, if you want to verify credential, should you only do rather simple validation or verification? Or should you really do complex validation, and should you really implement business logic into the SSI system? Or should the SSI system simple and just check the basics, like, yeah, okay, the issuer is trustworthy and authorized to issue the credential, and I don't check anything else, and then I just hand the data from the verified credential to the business systems, and the business systems to the actual business logic. And another issue is, for example, yeah, that archiving isn't really possible at the moment. So some credentials or documents, they need to be archived in a special way for several years. And if organizations can't do that, they just face a compliance issue, and they need to solve this. And another issue is that, yeah, terms of use, they do exist currently, but they are not enforced by any SSI systems as far as we looked at it. So I think it's basically, as what I mean by enforceable, I mean technically enforceable. I know that Clive is doing something in this area, but I don't think they have solved it either. But that's a complicated area. And we have also, for example, that in some cases, you have a credential, like, for example, joint degrees are issued by multiple education organizations together. So there's the question, how can we implement multiple issuers? At the moment, so far as we looked at it, there is no real way to have multiple issuers. But maybe you need to just redesign the credential or the business process, as I mentioned earlier, and then it could work. Now let's look at some potential constraints. I will only talk about the first three constraints. The other two are mentioned in the paper. So I think EIDAS is often portrayed rather positively if you look at something like LinkedIn. So I want to give you a critical view of EIDAS. I think I will introduce EIDAS 1.0 first and then talk about 2.0. So basically, EIDAS 1.0 and even 2.0, they focus mainly on electronic identification for natural persons. The main use case for EIDAS 1.0 was basically that each member state of the EU had their own EID system, and they wanted to make them cross-border compatible so that somebody from Spain can use their EID in, let's say, Italian, Italia or something like that. And basically that's a use case that isn't really that frequently used. So EDAS 1.0 failed. And this was basically to the badly chosen use cases, which wasn't used enough, and also conflicts between member states. So one thing which is usually a main topic is security. For example, Germany is the member state which usually has the highest requirements regarding security. And in EDAS 1.0, there are actually two different kinds of solution. One are called proxy services, and the other is the middleware solution. You don't need to know the details, but this middleware solution was only used by Germany, but every other state had to use the German middleware so that German citizens could use their EID in another state, but this led to many interoperability problems. And I think, as I already heard in some discussions, there is the same conflict happening with EDAS 2.0 already, because Germany has already high requirements regarding security, and other states, they don't see that the same. So I think this will be a main area of conflict. And another issue with EDAS is that EDAS does actually apply to natural persons and legal persons, so organizations. But if you look at the legislation and if you look on the technical documents, like the architecture reference framework, they are basically treated the same. So, for example, I think last week there was the reference wallet published, and this was just a mobile wallet, and a mobile wallet won't work for organizations. So they need more like something like a cloud wallet or on-premise wallet. So I think EDAS is mostly concerned with natural persons and organizations. Yeah, they are mentioned, but they are not really in the focus. And I think this will be also something that may lead to the failure of EDAS. And there's also the problem that there is some influence by the existing infrastructure. So EDAS 2.0 should rely on EDAS 1.0. And EDAS 1.0 is about federated identity. It's not about self-sovereign identity. And I think this will lead to the that EDAS 2.0 were actually some mix of federated identity and self-sovereign identity. So you see a lot of lobbying by organizations that are heavily invested in the federated identity system space, and they are so successful, and this may be an issue. Another constraint is the topic of MHL standards. So, for example, I'm not a fan of DITS. I don't like the DITS standards. So I think the problem of DITS methods is well known. And I think, yeah, that this is actually a problem. And I'm not really sure decentralized identifiers for natural persons, that they have benefits. But I'm not sure if an organization really needs decentralized identifiers, or if they can just rely on an identifier that's actually centralized. And what I also think that we will see a battle of standards emerging, and that's actually really bad for organizations, because most organizations, they want some kind of certainty which standard will basically prevail. So if you want to adopt an SSI solution, you don't want to invest in it as an organization. And then, yeah, it's not really interoperable with anything else. So I think we need more major standards to basically address this uncertainty, because if the standards are not mature, many organizations, especially organizations that are more conservative, like public sector, they won't adopt SSI. And last but not least, business model challenges. On the right side, you see actually a table from a study done by Kubach and Brosnagel, and they have for many years actually looked at this problem, and their message is always the same. Nobody wants to pay for identity systems. So the willingness to pay is actually really low, and especially low if you look at individuals. And I don't think individuals won't pay for wallets. So Google Wallet is free, Apple Wallet is free, wallets in Europe for individuals will be free. So, but who will pay? Organizations will pay. And either if they are forced, and this is actually under EIDAS, big organizations are forced to accept credentials, the EID credentials issued under EIDAS. So if they are large enough, they have to provide the opportunity to a European citizen that they can use their EU wallet to authenticate. Or what I hope that it has some kind of benefit for the organization, so they will adopt it. For private organizations, that's usually monetary benefits, or for public sector organizations, there may also be other benefits. And besides EIDAS, there are also sometimes other things that are forced. So, for example, in supply chains, you may be forced to document certain things and to verify them, so that your supply chain actually doesn't contain no child labor or something like that. So there are other things that will force organizations to adopt solutions to solve this problem. But there remains the question who finances the whole infrastructure. So for example, if you have something like verifiable data registry that needs to be employed over multiple, yeah, somebody has to pay for all that, and it's not really clear who will pay for it. So in Europe, I think there is some discussion about that the state will pay for that, but I'm not sure. So let's come to our conclusion and the outlook. So there are many requirements for organizations regarding SSI software. Our list is by no means exhaustive. I just covered some areas. There are many more in the paper. And our paper and our research focused on general requirements. So specific requirements, for example, for single industry, are also very important, especially if you want to build an actual product. For example, we examined Cargo by Sverity, and this is a solution targeted towards pharmaceutical supply chains. So they have many industry-specific requirements, and those requirements will be important, but we didn't look at them. And as I've shown, current SSI products, they have their gaps, and they need to improve to fulfill the requirements. But I don't think they have to fulfill every requirement that we have found. And also discussion, which I mentioned already in the EIDAS section, SSI principles are being compromised. So there will be some compromise. And this also leads me to one of the questions in my outlook. For example, if we replace the holder, the human holder with a holder that is an organization or a machine, do all SSI principles still apply, or do we need new ones? For example, something like, I know there are many different principles, but let's say one principle is privacy. Then this applies to human holders. An organization doesn't have privacy, but they have maybe something like secrecy. And the thing why principles are, in my view, important, because I consider they one foundation for deriving requirements. And that's why I think we need to look at, yeah, do the SSI principles still apply if the holder is not a human? And there's also the questions that I asked myself a lot. Do organizations really need the whole package of SSI, or do they just need some kind of way to exchange information in a verifiable and automated way? And I'm not sure. We can discuss this, and yeah, I think that's the end. And if you have any questions or remarks, you can now ask me. And the papers which I mentioned in this presentation are available in my research profile, so you can look them up and read them carefully.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ricardo. And Alan is like, got his hand like doubly raised. So Alan Forgers.
Yeah, I spent the bulk of my career at IBM and HP, so I'm very aware of the enterprise problems. One minor point, when you have a modifiable credential, there's an analogy with using certificates as capabilities, and the idea is you wrap them. So the doctor issuing the new vaccination certificate would wrap the original in his, rather than having it next to it or somehow combined in another way. That's a minor point. The big problem is if company A issues a certificate, a credential, company B would have to understand the whole point of, you know, all the rules in company A for who is allowed to issue the credential. I'm wondering if company A can't provide a single point inside company A that company B trusts to do the verification on behalf of company B, that company B would trust that, because otherwise it's too hard to understand the rules of your own company, much less another one.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah. You can't really understand the rules of another company. But I'm not sure if you really have a way to, because if you have this kind of endpoint, we are going away from credentials and you have a lot of interfaces that you would have to interact with and you would have to integrate them. So this may be a bit complicated if you have lots of organizations that you interact with. You would need to integrate each interface. But I get your point that this rule who is authorized to do what needs to be verifiable for organization B, so that they know that the person who did this for organization A is actually authorized to do so. So I think there needs to be more research into this area.
Thank you. Anyone else want to have a final question or final comment?
I will add a comment. So great presentation, Ricardo, and just want to second your points in the last two slides in regards to kind of the business model and outlook. I think one of the biggest challenge in our community is the monetization, or some people might call it the product market fit. You know, if we couldn't really figure out how do we actually sell SSI, and I don't think the word self-sovereignty or decentralization actually works. We actually try to actually figure out this kind of messaging at Spokio, and the regular consumers, one, they don't really understand, and second, the value prop is too distant. So they are not willing to pay for it. I just seen one of your slides in regards to the data subjects and the holders, the willingness to pay in surveys or marketing campaigns is not there. So I think this is one challenge that our community in general needs to overcome in order to find that product market fit with a general audience.
Yeah, as this is also a challenge we encountered in talking with the interview, with the experts in the interviews. So one company, which we worked with, Yolocom, they actually, they went out of business. They had an open source, business model, and their business model was to sell basically, to advise companies how to use their software, but it didn't work. I think Trinsic does a good job with branding SSI as reusable identity. I think maybe reusable identity is a better term, but I think identity is just a small area. So things like all these kinds of documents, they don't have anything to do with identity. So verified credentials offer this new opportunity to not just solve identity problems, but to digitalize several kinds of documents and make them verifiable. So I think, but I think this term reusable is a good term, and it's, and I agree that decentralized or the self-sovereign identity doesn't make really sense to business people. It doesn't sell well. So you need to define some new term, but I don't have a solution for that.
I don't too. That's why I'm still searching for it.
Yeah.
And that is a great conversation for this community to continue. So we are at time. So thank you, Ricardo. This was a great discussion and talk. And we'll look forward to having an opportunity as a community to discuss this further. Thank you, and have a great Tuesday, everyone.